Hi, this is Scott Wilkinson, host of Home Theater Geeks. In episode 150, I chat with Chris Vernon, CEO of Sontia, about his stable phase technology, which promises to improve the sound of audio systems. So stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Home Theater Geeks is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Home Theater Geeks with Scott Wilkinson, recorded March 4th, 2013, episode 150, Improving Audio, One Speaker at a Time. This episode of Home Theater Geeks is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All stream directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey there, Scott Wilkinson here, the Home Theater Geek. This week, my guest geek is Chris Vernon, who is the founder of Sontia Limited and the inventor of a new audio enhancement technology, which we're going to learn all about today. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for staying up so late. You're calling us all the way from beautiful England, and it's quite a bit later there than it is here, but we sure appreciate your night owl nature, at least for today.
No problem. Somewhere in the world, it's morning. That's my philosophy nowadays.
Very good. Hey, those who are tuned in to the live stream at live.twit.tv or logged into the chat room at irc.twit.tv can post questions for Chris, and I will pass along as many as I can. So, Chris, before we start talking about this new technology that you've developed, I do want to point out a little bit of your history. You are, in fact, a professional musician, a guitarist, I believe.
That's right, yeah.
Yep, and you've, in fact, done session work since you were 14 years old.
That's right, yeah. I got started early as I was a classical guitarist and electric guitarist, which gave me a bit of work because, you know, being able to read music, that kind of that puts you in a different place as a guitarist, most don't. I started hanging around studios early at a young age, I guess, and so that gave me, you know, two passions, which were audio technology and coffee.
Yeah, I guess coffee is very common amongst studios. Well, speaking Catherine's of reading essential. Music, yeah. You have heard the old joke about how do you get the electric guitar player to turn down?
Go on.
You put a piece of sheet music in front of him. musicians' jokes. Anyway. Then at age 19, you actually worked with Sir George Martin of Beatles fame.
Sir George, yeah. Yeah. So I came on. George was patron of a National Music Academy in the UK, and I came on to write some of the technology syllabus, some of the course there. I taught and moderated there for a bit. Did that for about 3 years. That was a fantastic experience. So it spun out, started off in various studios, and then we built studios, recording studios, in a few colleges across the country, and rolled the course out there. And that was a really great experience.
I love that you worked on an educational project to teach people, you know, how to record music and I'm sure mix and master and do all that stuff for the next generation. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And then not only were you involved in music and music education and recording technology education, but you also did some technical work on the PS3 and PSP game consoles for Sony.
What we were doing at the colleges and universities at the time, you know, game audio was a big thing. And so I was doing a course module on game audio, and we worked quite closely with the games industry to find out how we can you know, train today's musicians and audio engineers to have the appropriate skill sets. And looking at the games industry, you know, I saw some very capable hardware and some incredibly talented programmers. On the other hand, you had, you know, really talented musicians and composers, but the audio that was coming out in games was always, you know, below par and less than it should have been. And so I kind of figured out that the tools that we've got, you know, from a software point of view and using the hardware didn't really match the tools that professional musicians were used to using and that we'd use in studios. So we kind of set out, we span out and left the teaching, and we went to do audio tools for the games industry. We did some really cool work for PSP and the PS3. And it was just really about, can we make tools that a musician would understand and be able to get, you know, better results out of? Mm-hmm. And that's led on to, you know, as we started doing this, we found a cool way of controlling speakers. And, you know, a few years later, here we are doing this.
So that leads very nicely into your company now, Sontia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which you started, I believe, in 2004. Is that correct?
In various guises. We really started doing what we're doing now around 2009. Mm.
And the technology is called Stable Phase Technology, or SPT. Mm-hmm. So how did you come about developing it? And obviously, most of the time we're going to spend on the show today is discussing how it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so SPT, stable phase technology, it's kind of the basis of what we do, and you know we're doing lots of different things at the moment. But the stable phase technology, really, the impetus for that is as a recording engineer and composer, you know, studio musician, I was used to spending countless hours, you know, mixing and engineering a track. And you would listen to it on all, you know, all sorts of different monitor speakers. And if you've been into any big studios, of course, you've got the big Jennies, you know, stuff mounted in the walls or Quested monitors or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we all kind of know in the studios, certainly on the music production side, that quite often they're for show and for, you know, for the paying clients. Because if you mix stuff on those big monitors alone, it'll never sound anything like that on anything else. And so, you know, the dirty secret of a lot of the music industry at the time was whatever you had installed in the studio, you'd still mix it on, you know, NS10s, little Yamaha NS10s with a piece of toilet roll folded up and stuck over the tweeter because they were a bit bright at the time.
I actually talked to that about a Yamaha VP who was on the show some time ago, and we were remembering the NS10 and putting the toilet paper on the tweeter, right, just kind of dampen it down a little bit. But you're right; you have to in a recording studio. You often do mix on lesser speakers because you know that's what it's going to get played on.
Exactly, and that was a huge frustration because not only do you try it on the smaller near field monitors and the grot boxes as we call them, you know, the single drive unit speakers, you listen to it in your car, you listen to it on different monitors, you get used to those speakers and the room, and yet you'd still go and listen to the track on someone else's hi-fi or, you know, whatever audio system they've got in a different room, and it's a different mix. It's, you know, it's an entirely different piece of content, and you know that's hugely frustrating. It's very difficult to legislate for that and know how people are going to use it. And so the SPT that we are using right now is really, it's a software solution to start with, and it's being put into partner products. So the first product to hit the market with this is an LG range of soundbars, and this software solution helps to control the speaker device. First of all, we characterize it, we learn a lot about that audio device, and then we can do all sorts of corrections there, which mean that you've got a calibrated system, and you know it's back to it's a well-worn phrase, sometimes misused, but it is about the artist's intention, the producer's intention. So we're not trying to make a colorful speaker. We're actually just trying to give you the detail that the guys that, you know, made that soundtrack, you know, wanted you to hear.
Beatmaster in the chat room is asking, don't forget the normalization effect that many MP3 players add must drive producers crazy.
Yeah, I think that's an understatement.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I think what I understand from this, and I must admit, I saw a demonstration at CES in the THX room, and we'll talk about your relationship with THX in a minute. Mm. But I also heard a demonstration of the LG soundbar you mentioned in the Sontia booth there on the show floor. And from my understanding, from what I was talking about with various people there, was that this SPT technology must be applied individually to each speaker. And it really is meant to be applied to speakers more than anything else, right?
Yeah, simplistically, you can say that it's applied to speakers. Really, it's anything that it makes a noise, but we look at the entire device. So
yes.
The speaker is obviously the weak point in most audio systems. The speakers are really good at making heat more than anything else. You know, the extremely inefficient moving coil speaker designs, extremely inefficient, and, you know, they produce a lot more heat than sound. And so that's often the weak point in most audio change. And so that's the thing that needs the most correction. But we characterize the entire device. And you're right in what you say that we, you know, we have to look at the entire device, and it has to be for that particular model. So it's kind of like the, like Alan Kay said about, you know, if you're into software and you want to do that very well, then you've got to be into hardware too. For us to understand what the speaker's going to do, and, you know, therefore to be able to correct it, we've got to understand the entire device. We've got to get into the hardware. And so this is not an add-on stage at the end. This is something that we get involved with the manufacturers with as they're creating design in the products. And, you know, we do a very specific solution for that, all using the same stable phase technology as its basis.
Right, but applied individually to the measurements you get from a given system. So the way it was described to me was you take a given product like this LG soundbar or some other set of speakers or whatever, and you do a lot of measurements on them, first of all, measuring cabinet resonances, phase and frequency response, distortions, that sort of thing. Am I correct on that?
Massive amount of data. Yeah, we analyze the heck out of the thing. We get an awful lot of data in there. We measure it electrically. We do acoustic simulations. You know, we look at the physical properties of the box that it's in. The actual drive units are measured electrically and acoustically. And it's the thing is that you know, speakers and speaker systems are dynamic in nature as well. So the industry has got, you know, standard testing practices, and you know, you can stick it on a measurement system. We won't go and name the names, but generally, these things are tested or calibrated with a 3-second sine sweep, pass through it, and, you know, deconvolve that and think that it gives you all the information about the system. And it's far from it, you know. So we've got to analyze these speakers under different stresses, under different loads, at different temperatures, different amounts of time, different frequencies at different volumes. And we create this really dynamic characterization of the whole system, which allows us to do a very precise correction and give us some, you know, really quite stunning results from that.
Now we have several graphics we're going to show. One of them is called Sontia Process, I believe. I'm going to have to look up my list of images that I sent up to John, but hopefully we'll see that one, and that will show us. Here it is.
Okay.
So we can see the process by which that you have to go through for each product that you are going to apply this technology to.
Mm-hmm. So this is not so much about the actual technology, but certainly about the engagement that we take. You know, we, as I said, we get involved as early as possible. We would like to know about the system. We measure the audio performance on that. We go right from the input ADCs through to the amplifiers, filters, cabinet acoustics, you know, transducer, the whole nine yards. And we create that customized flavor of SPT correction and algorithms for that particular product.
Now, those algorithms run on the DSP that's in the system already, or you have to add a separate one?
Yeah. You know, most integrated systems nowadays have got microcontroller DSP, you know, that we can run quite happily on.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a quick look at Sontia app before and Sontia after, these two images that I wanted to show everybody. Why don't you describe a little bit about what we're looking at here? And keep in mind that many people are going to be listening to this podcast and not watching it. So we have to be a little careful there.
So I don't just wave my hands around. Yeah,
exactly.
So looking at this, we've got another slide which shows the phase distortions. You know, when we've got multiple drive units, these drive units can fight each other, you know, acoustically in the air and create beaming effects, hot and cold spots, narrow, small listening areas. We not only correct that, but we also correct all of the response from the individual drive units themselves. So this works from a mono system right up to, you know, stereo multi-way systems or even multi-way surround systems. We'll treat the entire crossover as well as, you know, the drivers as well as the box and acoustics.
And then if we take a look at the after image, we'll see a representation of what the Sontia system does.
Yeah. So as you've mentioned, the technology we refer to as stable phase technology, the output is actually a full linear phase system. The reason that we call it stable phase is, you know, speakers are dynamic. The reactive loads that change the response all of the time. So the last thing that you can do and expect a stable linear output is to use a static filter, which is common at the, you know, in the industry at the moment. And so we use nonlinear processing to keep that stable response. But you can see from, if you're watching, you can see the slide there, you can see that the sound waves from each drive unit are in sync now, not acting destructively. And so you get a much louder, cleaner output with a wider listening spot, you know, and a much more live and accurate sound.
Mm-hmm. Luis in the chat room has a very good question. Can the SPT process be retrofitted into an existing speaker system that you already have?
That's a really good question. Today, no, we don't do that. Simply because it's, you know, it's very hard to do. As I said, we need to know a lot about the product. The depth and level of analysis that goes into creating these characterizations and optimizations is really in depth, and so we need to get our hands on the actual products. We need to integrate well with the DSP. You know, there's a lot of code optimization in the device as well. So we like to work with the manufacturers that bring these products to market and see if we can help throughout the production. You know, we need to test to make sure that things are always operating in safe ranges. And you need to have a good in-depth knowledge of the engineering and the product. So it's, you know, maybe someday, but it's not a very simple solution to stick a box on at the end
right.
where we are right,
right
now.
You really need to be involved in the creation and the engineering and manufacture of the speakers right from the beginning. I got a couple other questions. Midnight Rider asks, How does this work, or can it be applied to electrostatic speakers?
Yes, it can. Well, the honest answer is that we're just getting started. on this, and so we're going to find out where it works well. So far, what I can say is that we've tried all different types of drive units, from ribbon tweeters, piezos, moving coils, and we get great increases in performance from all of these. The quality and the type of changes seems to vary between different systems. And as I say, we're gonna learn more about it as we go on.
Sure. So. As I mentioned before at CES, I heard two demos. One in the THX room, which consisted of very expensive bookshelf speakers and very high-end amplification electronics. And I have to say that the difference, and of course there was an on-off, and you know, here it is with the SPT on, here it is with the SPT off. Sure. And I must admit the difference was relatively small. There wasn't a huge difference between applying this technology or not. But then when I went to the Santia booth and heard the LG soundbar, I heard a much greater delta, if you will,
it's big, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's quite a nice statement because, of course, the LG soundbar on the demo booth there is a real product. It's not tech demo. But actually, we may have been a victim of our own success on the THX demo there, because you know, if it sounds anything like, and most people would say, there's definitely a marked improvement. You can hear an improvement, not just a difference on the on-off with the Santia system. But that was running on, I think, $14,000 speakers, really high-end. Yeah. Very good performance, you know, if you measure those in the lab, very flat frequency response, very accurate. It was running on a THX Ultra 2 Aragon amplifier, you know, really high-end performance, great damping factor for those, control those big speakers. But the difference in that demo is that when we switched to the Santia solution with the SPT optimization, that was actually running then on small 25 watt per channel Class D amplifiers, really designed for TVs, running off a PC laptop power supply, much lower end components. So we're showing the difference that we can actually do with software engineering. Not to say that the hardware engineering's a bad thing. We'd always like people to design better quality equipment and better quality speakers, but just to show, you know, the difference in cost and size and heat and everything else that you get with, you know, big amplifiers and big speakers, what you can actually do with software.
That's very interesting. I had forgotten, in fact, that when you switched on the Santia algorithm, that you switched from that big giant Aragon amp to little 25 watt Class D amplifiers.
Yeah. Yeah.
The sound did not degrade significantly at all. So that really says something. I agree.
Yeah.
Got a couple more.
Not saying that the Aragon's bad. So, you know, it was a great amplifier.
Oh, it's a great amp. Sure.
You know, but we like to see what we can do with great hardware and great software.
Yeah. Somebody here in the chat room, I'm trying to find it. Oh, Beatmaster, of course, is asking, how does this compare with Odyssey?
So, I'm not going to go specific into, you know, the various people doing.
They're sort of different things.
They are different things. I should talk a bit more about how the technology works and how we're doing things different. I know, fundamentally, I applaud anybody that's, you know, trying to inject better quality audio into consumer experience. It's a very, very worthy cause. You know, we've got our own take on it, and you've heard the demos. One of the other demos that you heard on the booth has got other industry standard speaker correction, shall we say, versus the Santia speaker correction. You heard that difference, and it's, you know, most people.
Yeah, it's true. The main difference I think we want to point out here is that Odyssey is applied after the fact. And it does some measurements and so on to whatever speakers are in the room, and it sort of takes the room into account. Whereas Sontia SPT analyzes an individual speaker product and applies itself to that sort of ahead of time. In fact, Mooncat in the chat room was asking how does SPT deal with room acoustics, or does it remove them? Or obviously you can't know what the room acoustics are going to be when a speaker that you've done your thing to it, where it goes. So it's, that's the room's going to have some effect on the sound.
Yeah. Well, our take and ethos on that is, you know, looking at the Odyssey and other systems, fundamentally, we do an awful lot more analysis of the actual products because we're able to. You know, as I just described, getting into the product early on, being involved in the actual makeup of the product and the engineering, or at least seeing what's there, we can accommodate much better with that when we're involved. And so we're more deeply involved on that side. But then also, as you point out, you know, the Odyssey have got their room correction system. What we try and do is actually get back to the speaker and make sure that the output of the speaker is as perfect as possible. You know, as human beings, we're actually really very good at reverse ray tracing acoustics, if you like. I don't know if you've ever, you know, for example, one of the first sort of recording modules that we would always do in, when I was lecturing, would be, you know, to record some drum overhead mics. And everybody would come out of the room. You'd set the mics up, you know, using monitor earphones, and you set the mics up in the room. You'd listen to it sound great. You'd go and listen to the recording in a different room. And everybody's always surprised when they first start recording how much more room you seem to capture on the recording than when you actually stood there in the room. Mm. And of course, microphones hear the world differently to our ears, because when we're in a room, we can deduct it very easily. We can correct for those systems. That doesn't mean that, you know, rooms aren't bad and that we shouldn't pay attention to the acoustic design in rooms or treatment, be it DSP or otherwise. But the fundamental problem that I've got with other room correction systems is if you don't know what the speaker's producing to start with, how on earth can you try and fix that when it's a black box problem? You know, just taking a measurement from the room and trying to work backwards and fix the room and the speaker together, you really got, you know, mission impossible there. So what we have done is we've tried other room correction systems on top of a Sontia corrected system, and without fail so far, we've seen that the room correction systems work an awful lot better when the speaker is corrected to start with. So essentially, we allow the room correction system to do its job properly. Because we've sorted the output, we know that the output is calibrated from the speaker to start with.
Well, I want to get more deeply into how it works. Another couple of quick questions, though, from the chat room. First, Lawn Dog is asking: so, will this system only work on stereos that are or sound systems that are a complete set, meaning the amplifier and the speaker, or can you just apply it simply to the speaker, not knowing what amp might be applied to it?
No, we do. You may get some success with correcting just the speaker, but you know, our ethos is to do the entire system. A speaker will react very differently paired to a different amplifier. And so we can't just make libraries of amps and speakers, if you like. We're going to treat the entire system as a whole. And that goes back to, you know, the previous question, another really good question on can this be an add-on box later on. That's one of the things that makes it not so simple for where it is today.
Right. Luis asks, what about headphones? Probably the same issue applies there. You don't know what's driving them.
In many headphones, you don't know what's driving them. In some headphones, you do know what's driving them. Because, of course, we can get wireless headphones, very popular nowadays. And, you know, you've got the line driver built into a DSP and Bluetooth module more often than not. And that's one of the really exciting pieces of news that we've got at the moment is that we have moved into CSR and the Bluetooth solutions that they do, and that's the vast majority of the audio music market for Bluetooth. So we've gone and actually ported all of the Sontia algorithms from DSPs, you know, separate DSPs that you get in AVR systems, soundbar TV systems. We've actually moved that and got a very tightly optimized set of Sontia algorithms running on the Bluetooth module in the tiny built-in DSP that exists within there. And so we're actually going to be able to start offering the Sontia solution for a whole range of convenience audio products, you know, such as headphones and the small, you know, Jambox type speaker systems. And we're really excited about that.
Because they all use basically the same Bluetooth module.
More often than not, yeah.
More often than not, yeah. Well, Londog has a great question here that's going to lead us into a more detailed look at exactly what SPT is doing. But before we do that, I would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor for this episode, which is Netflix. Now, of course, most of you already know that Netflix offers thousands of TV episodes and movies that can be streamed directly to just about any consumer electronics product you might have, be it a TV, a Blu-ray player, gaming console, dedicated box, your computer, of course, your smartphone, tablets, just about everything these days has a Netflix app built in, and which lets you go and get as much of that content, that streaming content from Netflix as you want, all for one low monthly fee. You can even start on one device and finish on another. So if you're in your theater and you're getting a little sleepy, but you don't really want to not finish the show, you can, you know, transfer over into your bedroom and fall asleep to your favorite show. Now, for those few of you who have not yet tried Netflix, they are offering a free 30-day trial to all TWIT listeners. All you have to do is go to netflix.com/TWIT. And I do recommend that you try that if you haven't yet. I find it very useful for finding content that I wouldn't otherwise have access to. That's netflix.com/TWIT. for your 30-day free trial. And we thank Netflix very much for their support of Home Theater Geeks and the entire TWIT network. So, Chris, Londog in the chat room is asking, what are the criteria for identifying what you're trying to achieve? Basically, what should a stereo or a system sound like? The age-old question. So what is your goal? What is your standard that you're trying to meet?
A standard for the output is really simple. So it goes back to my experiences as a musician and audio engineer, is to be able to communicate through, you know, through the playback device, what the artist originally meant for you to hear. And that, you know, that's why we can talk a bit more about the THX relationship in a bit, but that's where it ties in really well with that, because of course that's the whole raison d'etre for THX2 was, you know, George Lucas was making films and then, you know, going to see them at a theater and just being distraught that his artistic vision was not being communicated properly, and that the details that he put in there were not seen on the screen or heard in the auditorium. And so we've got very much the same ethos there of we're going to make a correct system that allows you to hear what, you know, what puts you closer to the artist.
For example, we have a couple of graphics that illustrate a couple of different things. One is phase distortion. And I think it might be called distortion before and distortion after.
Okay, so this is the crux of... That's not the slide I was expecting, but yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So you can see a lot of what a lot of people try to correct speaker systems based just on the frequency response. We look at frequency response and volume, and really that's looking at half the picture. There are big problems with what we call the phase and time domain performances of these systems. Now, actually, the time domain and frequency domain, you can't change one without changing the other. It's two halves of the same jigsaw puzzle. But all too often, phase distortions in speakers are just left to one side because they're very difficult to characterize and more difficult to correct. We can change them. You know, we have no problem in creating filter systems which change phase responses, but actually to correct them is a very difficult thing to do.
I think actually the graphic we might want to be looking at is called phase. So I might have called up the wrong one. There you go. Is that the one you were thinking
of? That's okay, yeah. So this actually shows, I don't know how much detail that you can see on the labeling there, but you can see actually some other speaker correction systems which are trying to address the phase, and you can see these three overlaid lines.
We can zoom in, fact, to the upper right.
As long
there
as
we
they
go.
Don't have, yeah, we've got third-party speaker optimization, so that's safe. But these, you know, these are the systems. This is on a commercial product which has three separate licenses for speaker corrections in different listening modes. This is actually from a commercially available TV. And you can see that actually to different extents they flatten the overall response, make a smoother line, but it still falls off radically and drops off at the end. And so it can be straighter, but not flat in its response. Whereas if you go across to the same exact system running a Sontia calibration, you'll see that there's very little deviation in that phase response. It's, you know, pretty ruler flat across the audio bandwidth.
Which is really critical, I think, to maintaining a very high quality and accurate portrayal of what's coming in.
Absolutely. I mean, we can deal with bandwidth limited speakers. You know, we used to putting subwoofers with smaller speakers to you know, put the low frequencies back in there. But speakers all make these nasty phase distortions, which you're not used to hearing in real life. And it's one of the things that instantly tells you I'm listening to a speaker. And we don't like that. We want to listen to realistic sounds. And so I liken one way of getting your head around this, if you're not into, you know, analyzing speakers, is to compare it to a lens on a camera.
Oh, and we have some images there too. Singer one through seven. Let's start with.
Yeah, so
singer one.
Okay, yeah, that's a good illustration. If you were to look at a bad lens on a camera, it spreads frequencies of light, and you can see this blurred image with a color fringing. All speakers, you know, actually release different frequencies at different times, and they spread the frequencies of sound in much the same way that you get this chromatic aberration in a camera lens or a projector lens. And so if you were to take that, you can see that there's a loss of definition, that the color balance is all wrong. You know, face looks quite red there. It's bleeding into the skin tones. And so you could use an equalization tool to try and flatten that response. There's somewhat of a losing battle, though, because if you move on to the next slide, you should probably see what you can do there. If, for example, you've got a red face, we can turn the reds down.
If we go to singer two,
you know, we pull the reds down, and all of a sudden, the face looks green. It adjusts everything, not just the areas that we want to fix. And you know, if we then move on to the next one, you see that you can adjust the greens down and try and equalize that. And you can see now that we've ended up with, you know, a much more monochromatic. We're heading towards a very grayed out image, more natural in the skin tone somewhat, but we've lost a lot of definition. You can improve that still and try and adjust the contrast with dynamic range control, but it's still not a natural image. And the problem is, as I say, it's looking at just one half of the picture when we try and voice speaker systems in the traditional sense of EQs and dynamic range control. If we go back and we fix these phase distortions, we can actually align all the frequencies together, and without having to resort to equalization in the system, we can get much better, more natural audio performance. Of course,
just as in this visual example, for those of you who are watching, We've corrected the chromatic aberration, the smearing of red and green, by doing what in this case?
So that's just aligning all of the different color channels is doing exactly as you've done there is the same as we do essentially with the speaker system, aligning all of the frequencies and balancing them out gives you that, you know, that's the same picture there, and you've got a much greater resolution and detail as well as skin tone and accuracy. But we can improve that further still. You know, some people like to have voiced systems where, you know, some audio manufacturers have got certain characteristic sonic signatures, if you like, or a user may want to add in their own preference to their listening style or room that they're in. And we can do that too.
So the next picture would show us there's a little bit slightly altered image with probably the viewer, in this case, the viewer's preference for a little more saturation or whatever.
Exactly. So by doing this and using our tools and altering the algorithm, we can actually do this in a way that doesn't then put that chromatic aberration and phase distortions back into the audio signal. So if you were just to try and put compressors and EQs on top of this, you can damage a lot of that, you know, a lot of the good work that we've done in correcting the system. So we have a tool chain which allows the equipment manufacturer or the voicing engineers or potentially the end user to alter the audio performance of the device while still keeping the detail and keeping it, you know, truer to the original without creating these distortions.
Dr. T in the chat room is saying a bit confused about a couple statements on your website, which is Sontia.com. Sontia SPT integrates seamlessly, can be ported onto most platforms, meaning no additional hardware.
Yeah. And, you know, that is, as I said before, based on we work in the actual products. So, you know, today's consumer audio devices, be they soundbars, TVs, jamboxes, headphones, most of these devices now necessarily have got the required microprocessors, DSPs, which we can, you know, fit our code onto, especially in the case of Bluetooth. What it doesn't do is just somehow do a magic fix on a set of passive bookshelves without any other hardware. Obviously, we need something to load the algorithms onto.
A couple other images I wanted to quickly show. One was the impulse response graphic that we have here I think is very interesting. An impulse is just a very short, quick sound wave that lasts a very short period of time that's fed into a speaker, and then we look at what happens to the output. And I think it's called impulse response. If we can pull that up, we'll be able to see. There it is. Needs to be zoomed out a little bit. If we can, maybe we can't. Okay, well, anyway,
I'm sure what we're looking at. It would have been a good graphic. But
it would have been a good graphic.
The impulse response.
There it is.
So there you go.
There we go.
Okay, so when you look at the impulse response of a speaker, essentially we say the quicker a speaker can start and stop, the more accurate it is. And so that's kind of the holy grail, you know, of a perfect speaker system is that it's instantaneously able to start and stop. And traditionally, speakers don't do that.
And sure, something called inertia, right? Once you get a speaker moving, it's going to keep moving, even if you remove the impetus or the impulse in this case. It's going to keep moving. And we see it here. We see a sharp peak where the impulse came in, but then the speaker you know, continues to vibrate for a while.
Yeah, and what's interesting as well, when you look at impulse responses, if it's not an entirely accurate or flat response, you always get before the main spike, you'll get some movement beforehand as it gears up for that, if you like. Whereas
inertia. It takes a while for the speaker to get going, Mm-hmm. And then it takes a while for the speaker to stop.
Yeah. And that is, you know, the impulse response is then tightly linked to its performance. As I said, time domain and frequency domain, it's actually the same thing. If you look at a corrected response, you'll see that it's able to start and stop much, much quicker. So these are actual recorded responses there. The other thing that you'll notice is for the same amount of energy going in, you'll see how much higher that spike is on the corrected response. Now, right. Essentially, what we've got on the first one is we're spreading those frequencies. So it's got the same amount of energy going in, but it's dissipated and it's spread across a wider area. So you don't get that sharp focus. It's, again, you know, if you think back to those images that we had, you've lost a lot of the detail because you've smeared it. By bringing it together again, we can make that speaker, you know, very dynamic, give it lots of resolution and detail without having to throw, you know, more volts at the speaker. And this is really important because, you know, we can all turn up the bass on, you know, we're all familiar with the loudness control things, which just essentially will turn up the bass content and the treble content. And of course, you can do that with an EQ. You can lose headroom in doing that, but also you're going to overheat the voice coils. And what we see on a typical system, for example, you know, the sound bars that are in mass production, you've got to make sure that these things don't burn up. And if we just turn the bass right up, you know, one, as you can testify from the demos there, you listen to the bass mode with the bass turned all the way up and then move it onto the Sontia mode, which is flat, and it's got a heck of a lot more bass to it. However, the interesting thing there is that the voice coil is actually running cooler on the Sontia mode than in the other bass mode.
How do you, as an algorithm writer and implementer, how can you actually influence the inertia of the voice coil and how it moves physically?
Well, as I say, the guys will characterize this system to within an inch of its life, really know under each situation what it's going to do when you give a certain input to the speaker system. And by knowing exactly how the speaker will respond, and I say speaker meaning the entire audio system there, we're able to pre-correct for that. And so it basically will know how the speaker is going to go wrong, and it'll know what we can do to fix that ahead of time within safe limits. And, you know, so things that are just going to be impossible for the speaker to do, we don't try and do, and we don't break it. And it's a, you know, it's a very fine balance. And when you get it right, and you've done this very detailed optimization, you can get really quite astonishing results from, you know, from it's. To be honest, I'm biased with it, but you'll have to back me up if you heard it. It's you can have a hard time believing that it's the same speaker system using the same amplifiers and same power supplies and, you know, same everything else. When you switch it over, it does. If you were listening with your eyes closed, it sounds like a very different audio system.
Yeah, Dr. T asks, are you using magnetic liquid, like, for example, like shock absorbers in the car? You're not actually going in to the speaker maker and saying you need to change, you know, how you do things physically in the speaker, are you?
That's a really cool idea. We like that, but unfortunately, we don't get quite that much say in advising a speaker manufacturer what to do with the drivers. you know, it's. So no, we're working with the drivers that they're already specifying, and we work, you know, around those hardware designs. I mean, really, the whole point for Sontia is that we can enable much higher quality audio reproduction over the devices that people actually use now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if I think of just my own home, I've got, you know, I've always had big reference class speaker systems, which are calibrated and, you know, Sontia optimized, and I've got a nice calibrated screen and I will come in to the house, and you know, my wife and kids will be sat there watching TV off an iPad or the MacBook or you know another tablet, yeah, available from other manufacturers as well as Apple.
Right.
But you know, you're watching it on these systems because this is convenient. This is the way we consume audio nowadays, and it's terrible that you know they do a great job, and there's a good reasons for why people have moved to consume the media over these devices, and they look gorgeous and they function beautifully. You know, very handy and easy to use. And it's the best way to get your content nowadays.
Not with the quality that you might want.
Certainly not from the audio using, you know, built-in speaker systems there. And it's not always about what the company have invested in the technology of the speaker. You're limited by size and, you know, design ethics, which are, you know, say for a product to be cool and sexy and people want to buy and use nowadays, it's going to be thin, it's going to be light, the battery's going to last forever on it. And these are generally not things that you would do when designing a product to make it sound good. And so essentially what we're trying to do is offer virtual acoustic design into these devices too. So there's a spectrum of products that this can go into. You've got the reference class THX type systems that you saw there on the, you know, $14,000-$20,000 high end hi-fi systems, but you've also got making a real big difference to consumer electronic stuff where, you know, it still may be a premium audio device. You know, you could imagine a set of £1,000 headphones, but still, you know, you're limited by the design of headphones or jam boxes. No matter how much money you want to invest in that, there's only so much you can do with, you know, brute force physical design.
You cannot change the laws of physics, as engineer Scott would say.
I'm glad you attempted that, not me.
Yes, indeed. So when we were talking offline before the show, you had mentioned that DSP is actually a dirty word for many audio engineers. How do you get around that that perception?
Well, that's a really good question. I actually thought I was coming on the show to ask you that one. in all seriousness, you know, we've seen there's been lots of other audio DSP things, which and digital as a whole, you know, digital got a bad rep in audio circles because digital can be, you know, very powerful and empowering us to do great things and make great improvements. But actually, where it's often being commercialized is to make things cheaper, you know, more easily reproducible. And so that's quality was never really the driver in a lot of these systems. And so we're all familiar with DSP algorithms, you know, built into TVs or soundbars or docks or whatever, you know, shipping in laptops, which make a difference to the sound, not necessarily an improvement. And, you know, that's great for some consumers that want to hear, you know, a change and a special effect and say, wow, I've got a wow turbo button thing here. But to us guys that really care about the sound, you know, you're changing it from the original and from a more accurate performance, and that's not a good thing. So this is very much about an engineered improvement rather than just making a difference. And I guess that's one of the things where THX is a really good, strong brand to bring to this because they see, you know, they see all of the audio technology that's out in the market and is coming to market. And, of course, they stand for quality. Best-in-class audio systems only get the THX badge. And, you know, so it's a very good partnership in that sense because we stand for the same things and, you know, we're obviously doing a good enough job.
Well, this in fact is why what I was hoping would lead you into THX, because I did want to make sure we highlighted the fact that Santia has partnered now with THX. And what does that partnership mean? What will result from that partnership?
Well, this is huge. You know, we hope it's going to be huge. What it really means is that one, THX now can hit a whole range of product areas that it wouldn't normally have hit, because, you know, THX has got this standard, and you can make great high-end audio devices like the demo that you saw, using, you know, esoteric materials and you know, large form factors. You can do that, and you can make very good high-performance audio equipment, but it's very good, very hard to get that same guarantee of quality in smaller, thinner, aesthetically designed devices such as soundbars, docks, you know, portable systems, which unfortunately are the things that people are using nowadays on, you know, on a day-to-day basis. And so it's really trying to put the audio quality back into those devices that people are using, and embracing the fact that we consume audio differently now. So it gives THX access to you know, to get into a technology play like that. I should point out THX have got a certification business model, and you're familiar with that. You see products submitted to THX, and, you know, people work with THX to create THX systems that are certified. This is a THX Technologies product. So it's we've got a screen cloth.
Oh,
there.
Look, there it is. Okay, very good.
Proves it's official. So you get the Santia flavor of our DSP algorithms, tuned by the guys at THX and integrated in systems in the same way that they do. So it doesn't have to be a certified system, but it also doesn't stop it from being a certified system. So maybe we're going to see products which ordinarily, on just their you know, physical and acoustic design, wouldn't have been able to attain THX spec. Maybe now we can actually improve the performance of those devices to bring them up to THX spec, but also to hit different product groups that are not in the certification class, so that you can get a THX Technologies. And, you know, these guys have set up a lab to use Santia technology, and we're incorporating some of the THX technologies, like you've seen, like Loudness Plus, et cetera, can also be brought, and we do put that into the Santia suite algorithms and integrate that into our SPT solutions.
And finally, we're running out of time, but I would like somebody in the chat room asked, and I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, what products can we find the Santia SPT technology in now, and what products can you tell us about will be coming down the pipe?
So right now you can see this in a couple of LG soundbars. There's a 2020 soundbar was the first soundbar. It's actually the first commercially available mass production linear phase speaker system anywhere that we've been able to see. And that features the Santia technology. And so that's, you know, it gives a really great performance from that small form factor. There's going to be a couple more products with LG that you'll see coming out over this next year. We hope to see some really great and exciting products with alongside THX released later on this year. And I obviously can't speak too much about the unreleased products, unfortunately, this time.
Right, right.
I'll promise to let you know as soon as we can.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I really do appreciate it. It sounds like a fabulous technology, and the demo I heard was very impressive. So I do look forward. I do look forward to hearing more about it.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for being here, especially so late at night, all the way from London. I think you're in London, right?
I'm in Sheffield.
Sheffield. Okay. Still plenty late enough for you. And thank you for staying up to talk with us today. I really appreciate it.
No problem, Scott. It's a pleasure.
So that's Chris Vernon. He's the CEO of Sontia and the inventor of stable phase technology. And you can learn more about it, of course, at Sontia.com. That's Sontia.com. You can find me online at avsforum.com, as well as hometheaterhifi.com. You can also email me at scott@twit.tv, and you can follow me on Twitter at htgeekscott. Next week, I have two guest geeks scheduled, Jim Venable and Alan Ruberg, both of the WISA Association. That's the Wireless Speaker and Audio Association, to talk about what else? Wireless audio. There are some really exciting things happening in that field. After many years of wireless audio kind of being the poor stepchild of real audio, I think we're about to see some major improvements in that whole area. So I do hope you will join me for that. Until then, geek out.